Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, The Other Side with Karen Hollis. What causes spirits to return to the living? Do they always have a message? Do they intend on being seen and heard? Around 2014, a family in Connecticut had an unexpected visit from a young man who had perished on their local water tower many years before. The reason for his return to a house in a family he had no association with troubled the family and investigators alike. Karen Hollis was brought in to help understand and communicate with the spirit of the boy, who now insisted on being part of this family.
She had contacted Kurt Knapp, who's the co-founder of Goners, and was talking to him about her daughter, Macy, and how there were strange things happening in the house. And so typically what happens when somebody calls Ghosts of New England Research Society is they're really freaked out, you know. So she started talking about what seemed like some very benign things happening around the house. She had two teenage daughters, and the phenomena seemed to be focusing on Macy, which is her oldest at the time, who was in high school. And the girls kept buying hairbrushes, and the hairbrushes kept going missing. And at the time, Kurt kind of laughed and said, well, you know, are they misplacing them? What's going on? And this is often what happens is with the paranormal is something will ramp up. In other words, something benign seems to go missing and then reappear. Or the phenomena will, you know, seem like nothing big, and then it'll start to ramp up in the house. So hairbrushes started going missing. And Kurt didn't think that was all that startling or anything like that. And he said, well, what else has happened? And then that's when the mother told the story about how her husband had told her that he was going fishing early in the morning one weekend, and that he was going to get up and he was just going to go fishing with his buddy because they live on the coastline. And so she rolled over one morning. She felt somebody, you know, right against her back. She knew it was her husband at the time, or thought it was. And she said to him, I thought you were going fishing. And whatever was in bed with her said, something like that, you know, just a growl kind of a thing. And she's like, what does that mean? She says, I'm going to get up and I'll be right back. And so she went into their master bathroom. And when she came back, it was gone. And so she freaked out, went running around the house looking for her husband, saying, like, you were just here. All she saw was, you know, this kind of like a lump under the covers, okay, when she got up to walk away to their master bathroom. And when she came back, whatever it was gone. And she swore it was him. Okay, so now the phenomena kind of ramps up a little bit, because you can imagine if you think that you're in bed with your spouse and, you know, all of a sudden you walk away for 2 seconds and you come back and now that spouse is missing, nowhere to be found in the house. She called her husband on the cell phone. He was just about to push off on the boat to go fishing with his buddy. He said, well, I told you I was going fishing early in the morning. And she goes, but you were just here. Like, you were just in bed with me. He goes, no, I wasn't. I don't know who was in bed with you, but it wasn't me. And he laughed. And she said, no, you were just here. And that's when she knew that things were starting to get a little more serious in the house. The feeling of being watched all over the house, the entire family. And then it seemed to keep focusing on her daughter for whatever reason. So these were the things that started happening all over the house, where things would go missing, they'd come back, And that's pretty typical of what we've experienced when we've been looking at different cases. So that's kind of what was going on there. It wasn't until later that we kind of tied it into the water tower. Mm-hmm. It was late in the investigation. Okay. When all that information kind of came through. And that came through after I came on the scene and we, you know, had gone there, set up our cameras. I banged on a wall and I said, if anybody's here, go ahead and bang back. You know, I just want to make sure that what I'm hearing is correct. And you heard knock, knock, is that good, right out loud.
Wow.
And all of us heard it, including the family.
Early on when this is all happening and Mary's experiencing that phenomena in her bed, Macy is having hairbrushes go missing and other activity. What is the husband thinking? Is he having anything happen to him at all, or is he just hearing all these stories secondhand from his family?
No, he said to me, I'm surrounded by estrogen. I've got two teenage girls and a wife, and I don't believe in any of this, and I have no idea what they're talking about. So he really wasn't thinking that this was anything until his wife, Mary, just started to scream at him, listen, you've got to believe us that this is really happening. Now, what he didn't tell his wife was that he was an avid, auto guy, and he liked to do auto body repair. He liked to pick up, you know, cars that had kind of been smashed and kind of completely repair them in his garage, in his man cave. And he didn't tell his wife that he ran a power line for all those tools, okay, into the garage, and it was right under the bedroom. So go seek power sources, Tony, all right? And that's what allowed him to manifest the way that he did. So that power line was literally ungrounded, running directly under their bedroom. And it's right next to Macy's bedroom where all of the, you know, hairbrushes went missing and all the kind of creepy feeling, you know, you could hear the voice, you know, is that good, knocking back. So again, what we find is usually there's a generated source of power that is allowing whatever it is to show itself or manifest. So I believe that the dead are around us all the time. And it's not that they have nefarious, you know, intentions all the time. People are people, dead or alive. People are either good or bad, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't make anybody do anything that they don't want to do, including a ghost. So all this idea that we can sage them away or say the Our Father or whatever it is that your religious leaning is a bunch of bunk, in my opinion. Ghosts of New England Research Society is a research society for a reason. What we try to do is identify it. I can communicate with it. I might be able to broker a deal with it, whatever it is, okay, to leave you alone. But we always look for the power source to try to lessen the activity, or at least you won't hear the activity, or you won't see things moving around. So, that's kind of the long and short of how this particular entity was able to show himself that way.
When you have a power source like that, and it's something that essentially fueled this initially to get that in and brought this about, I guess, so to speak, where you said, you know, sometimes you can talk to them, sometimes you can broker a deal, as you put it, to get things to calm down. That's just the one. If the power source is still there, and let's say, you know, the deal, for lack of a better term, has been brokered with the entity that's been causing the current stream of problems, isn't it just as easy then for something else to pop in if that power source is still in existence?
Theoretically, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Because again, you know, I believe that, you know, ghost entities, whatever you want to call them, they're pure energy. Mm-hmm. So they feed off of energy. So, yeah, I mean, you could have one, you could have three, you could have many, you know. I was in one house in Waterford, Connecticut, and I was taking some photographs in front of an old fireplace. So this is a house that's over 200 years old. And in the photograph, it was one of those, you know, old-time cameras. This was probably back in the 80s, okay, where, you know, it automatically developed, okay, the film, it was like one of those automatic developing film cameras.
Sure.
And in the picture, there's an old lady. You can see right through her. There's a little kid. Okay, you can see right through him. And then you see what looks like a cat, and you can see right through the cat. And so once I recognized that I had taken the photograph when it was like just teeming, pouring rain outside, it was the energy of the rain beating down on the house, because water is a conductor, that allowed me to see that in the photograph. When I asked the old lady what was the deal with the kid and the cat, she had no idea who these other two entities were. So they may have occupied different spaces and time historically within that home and did not know about each other, but yet stood in the same spot, which will blow your mind, you know? So we don't have answers for that. We just know that it can exist. It can be a historical overlay, or it could literally be an entity that, you know, wants to show itself because there's energy there.
Which is interesting, because sometimes we have stories and experiences where you have the entities on the other side clearly interacting with one another on the same plane, but usually they are of the same time period. Then sometimes you have exactly what you talked about, where maybe they were at different points in time and don't even know the two exist, but they're showing themselves to those in the present.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
What are some of the other power sources, for lack of a better term, that are fairly common that these things can feed off of to show themselves?
Well, I'll give you an example of something that we're going to be investigating, and I can't tell you the name of the business because, of course, that would be confidential between the owner and Ghost of New England Research Society. But there is a business that is essentially a high-end wine cellar. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so what this gentleman does is, if you have an exceptional wine from an exceptional year, he will store it in what used to be a nuclear bunker, okay? And so it was turned into a storage facility that is climate controlled now. And there are generators within this cement bunker, which is a 10,000 square foot bunker. It used to house important documents for insurance professionals here in Hartford. Ever since they put in that climate-controlled system and that generator, the walls are 18 inches thick and they're concrete within this bunker. They're hearing the clinking of glasses. They're hearing, like, parties going around them as they're trying to work, because they take wines in and out. Like, let's say you have a wine, you're having a party, and you want his service to bring that wine back to your home, right, for that particular party. So they have to go down into the cellar in order to retrieve that particular wine in that particular rack in a particular row. They're seeing shadow figures going by the aisles. They're hearing, like I said, party-type behavior going on. They're smelling cigar smoke. They're hearing men playing poker down there. And so, you know, part of this may be a historical overlay, because the people that owned that particular bunker before were insurance professionals, okay, at a time when it was all male-owned. So it may be that they're just hanging out down there. But I think it's based on the generator. Either the generator isn't grounded, or they're feeding off of something.
Was this bunker used for parties at one point in time?
It wasn't used for parties, but what would happen is the gentleman that owned it, or the several people that owned it, they would use it like a man cave.
Okay.
In other words, you know, they had several families. This was back in the 60s when they were afraid that all hell was going to break loose for nuclear war. They had a place for their families to be in case all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. And they would go down there and play poker.
Okay. Because my question was going to be, because I'm thinking bunker, I'm thinking, you know, places that typically aren't inhabited by anyone. It's more so storage. And if there's nobody that's really coming and going, why would there suddenly be these residual or conscious things going on in a setting where it had never happened?
Well, think about it. It's a, people that want to provide that kind of security for their family, right?
Sure.
Maybe a little conspiracy theory going on, we're all going to go up in flames. Maybe not. I mean, in the 1960s, that was a real possibility,
sure.
So, they own this particular you know, huge bunker. They had places for their families to hide in case nuclear war happened. Mm-hmm. And now they're all dead.
Yeah.
So now this new generator comes in. Who knows if they've been there all along and nobody could hear them.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.